Welcome to Damn Good Movie Memories with your host, Brian Davis. This podcast is the cure for your long commute and super boring workday.
In 1977, Voyager 2 was launched into space to the outermost regions of the universe. It carried an invitation in all languages for alien life forms to visit our planet. Someone, somewhere, listened and accepted our invitation. Get ready. Someone is coming. Someone like no one she has ever known before.
Can you clone a living organism from the hair of a dead man?
We're hypothesizing a technology that's probably 100,000 years ahead of it.
He has powers we cannot imagine, and the face and touch of the man she loved.
I send greetings.
What's the matter with you?
How much English do you understand?
I understand greetings in 54 planet Earth languages.
Do you seriously expect me to tell the president that an alien has landed, assumed the identity of a dead house painter, and is presently out tooling around the countryside in a hopped-up 1977 Mustang?
You're not from around here, are you?
Think of what it would mean to talk to a being from a civilization like that. Think of what we could learn.
I don't understand. There isn't much time, please. He doesn't want to hurt anybody. Can't you just leave him alone?
What the hell ever happened to good manners? We invited him here!
So far to come. So much to do. So little time to fall in love. Look up. Company's coming. John Carpenter's Starman.
Hey there, it's Brian Davis, and for this week's episode, we're going to cover the movie Starman from 1984. The studio was Columbia Pictures. Release date was December 14th, 1984. The running time, 115 minutes, and it was rated PG. The budget, $24 million. The box office took in $28.7 million, making it the 30th-ranked movie of 1984. Roger Ebert at the time gave it 3 out of 4 stars. Here's his review. Starman begins by reminding us of Voyager, that little spacecraft that is even now speeding beyond the solar system. Remember Carl Sagan on The Tonight Show explaining to Johnny about all of the messages that were on board in case someday an alien race found this postcard from Earth? Voyager carries greetings in all of the tongues of man, and there is something inevitable about the scene early in Starman when we get an extraterrestrial visitor who has studied them carefully and is able to say hello in 100 different ways. All of this seems like a setup for a science fiction movie, but what's interesting is the way director John Carpenter makes a U-turn and treats Starman as a road movie. Starman contains the potential to be a very silly movie, but Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen have so much sympathy for their characters that the movie, advertised as space fiction, turns into one of 1984's more touching love stories. Meanwhile, Carpenter provides many of the standard scenes from earlier road movies. The most interesting thing about Starman is probably Bridges' approach to playing a creature from another world. The character grows gradually more human as the film moves along, but he is never completely without glitches. His head movements are bird-like, his step is a little uncertain, he speaks as if there were just a millisecond delay between brain and tongue. Actors sometimes try to change their appearance. Bridges does something trickier, and tries to convince us that Jeff Bridges is not inhabited by himself. I think he succeeds, and that Starman makes Voyager seem like a good investment. And that's the end of Ebert's review. I don't remember the first time I saw Starman. It was likely on video as a kid. And as I grew up and started to watch more and more Carpenter films, Starman almost gets forgotten by many because it's unlike most of his best-known films. However, it's probably my favorite John Carpenter film. All right, let's get into the main cast. Jeff Bridges plays the Starman, so I think this is actually the first film I've covered where Bridges is the star of the film. He, of course, comes from an acting family, as his father was the terrific actor Lloyd Bridges, and his brother Beau is also a successful actor. Jeff's career began in the late 1960s with TV show appearances. His first major film role was in 1971's The Last Picture Show, directed by Peter Bogdanovich. His most notable films until 1984 Starman include Thunderbolt and Lightfoot with Clint Eastwood, King Kong, which was the 1976 remake, Tron, and Against All Odds. Karen Allen plays Jenny. Now, Allen's career started very successfully right out of the gate as Katie in National Lampoon's Animal House. The next year, she had a key role in Cruising with Al Pacino. And then in 1981, she co-starred in her most well-known role as Marion in Raiders of the Lost Ark with Harrison Ford. The director, John Carpenter. Now, I covered Carpenter's early career in the Halloween 1978 episode. After Halloween, Carpenter directed Elvis, which was a TV movie with Kurt Russell, The Fog, Escape from New York, also with Kurt Russell, and The Thing, which was a remake, again with Kurt Russell, and then he directed the Stephen King adaptation of Christine. All right, let's get into the making of the film. So Starman was in development for years at Columbia Pictures, and then was early in 1983 that it was offered to John Carpenter to direct. Now, Carpenter was intrigued with the story, as it was unlike anything he had done to that point. It was a love story, along with being a road movie, and he loved the script. So Carpenter jumped at the opportunity because he felt he might not get another chance to do this type of film, since he was pretty much known as a horror director at that point in his career. Carpenter was also happy to have a pretty significant budget, this time to work with, as the majority of his films were smaller in budget. However, he did have a large budget with The Thing, and that didn't go as planned. But he realized this time, early on, that the special effects weren't going to rule this film. Now, part of the reason for the delay of making Starman was due to the enormous success of E.T. in 1982. As it turned out, the early script of E.T. was being developed at the same time as Starman. And E.T., of course, was optioned in favor of Starman. Even though Starman is different, the core of having a gentle alien life form arrive on Earth might have felt like a copycat film. What's interesting about E.T. is that also directly affected The Thing, as The Thing was released 2 weeks after E.T., and was part of the problem why it didn't do well initially at the box office. Not to mention the fact that The Thing was not a gentle, nice alien. But back to Starman, there were many actors who were thrown around to play the lead character, but Carpenter felt Jeff Bridges was the type of actor that would best suit the role. Bridges was fascinated by the character, but wasn't sure how to initially play the role. Once he realized that the character of Starman was essentially impersonating a human being, trying his best to fit in as an Earthling, Bridges felt he knew then how to play the role. He also studied how young children acted, along with certain animals. And if you watch how he walks in the film or moves his head, it is, like Ebert said, almost bird-like at times. Many actresses read for the part of Jenny, but Carpenter was most impressed with Karen Allen, along with her past work. While the Starman character is essentially the star of the picture, the Jenny character is the glue that holds this whole story together. So it was important to get the right actress for the role. And of course, Karen Allen fit that role perfectly. Charles Martin Smith had appeared successfully in a number of films since the early 1970s, like American Graffiti, in the Buddy Holly story, and the critically acclaimed Never Cry Wolf. Smith has said to this day that Starman is one of the best scripts he's ever read. Alright, let's get into the film. So it opens in 1977, as a space probe has been sent to outer space. And this is in order to discover new forms of life to those of planet Earth. We are then taken to Wisconsin, where we see Jenny Hayden, that's Karen Allen, sitting alone in her house, drinking wine and watching home movies of her and her recently deceased husband, Scott, played by Jeff Bridges. We are then taken to NSA headquarters, where they have detected an unidentified object, like a meteor heading to Earth. It ends up crashing in a fiery explosion in the same town that Jenny lives in, causing a mass forest fire. A glowing orb then guides itself to Jenny's house and scans around the premises while Jenny sleeps. It finds a movie projector and then a picture album. It sees a photo of Scott in the album and blends itself into the photo, along with a lock of his hair that Jenny had kept. Jenny awakens and finds the bright light in the living room and a newborn baby lying alone on the floor. Within seconds, the baby morphs into a full-size human man, looking exactly like Scott, and then drops a handful of metal-looking spears onto the floor. Those come into play later in the film. The transformation scene is fabulous and took 3 to 4 special effects experts to complete the illusion. Understandably freaked out, Jenny grabs a gun.
Scott. You're not Scott.
Scott. Chúc你们平安健康快乐. Здравствуйте. Приветствую вас.
Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is.
As the Secretary General of the United Nations, an organization of 147 member states who represent almost all of the human inhabitants of the planet Earth, I send greetings.
Jenny faints and the newly formed Scott, which is an alien or Starman, watches the home movies on the projector and quickly picks up on the mannerisms of the real Scott on the film. The Starman then goes outside and uses one of the metal spears, which glows now, and he sends a transmission to his planet which says, "Observation craft destroyed. Environment hostile. Completed symbiotic transformation. Rendezvous third day, landing area 1. Jenny awakens after fainting and thinks she dreamt the whole thing. But then she sees the Starman outside, and he's levitating with a glowing light.
Ah!
Ah!
Ah! Who are you? What do you want?
We... Oh.
I can't get the engine started. Where? Which way? Left, right?
Here. You know where that place is?
If this is California and down here's Texas, it must be like Arizona, maybe.
Want to be driven? Arizona, maybe.
Now, you obviously couldn't see it from the last clip, but one of the glowing spears created a hologram map of the United States. And so it's off to Arizona, maybe, for the meeting the Starman transmitted. While the Starman and Jenny drive, the U.S. government is trying to track the mysterious meteor which landed. One of the head scientists of the Extraterrestrial Intelligence Search Group is Mark Sherman, played by Charles Martin Smith, and he's tasked to study the meteor that landed in Wisconsin.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm Major Bell.
Hi, Mark Sherman. Is it clean?
Well, no radioactivity, no readings on bacteria. You attached to national security?
Not very. I just work for them.
Yeah.
On loan. Sort of like a library book. Actually, I'm with SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Oh, so they're sending you guys out of meteorites now, huh?
Well, only when they change course.
Change course? Can they do that?
Well, this one did, until they tell me.
Twice.
Either that or some airhead over at NORAD misread a glitch on his monitor.
Uh-huh.
Also came down slower than suborbital speed. So naturally, they decided to fire some missiles at it. Hey, what the hell are they doing?
Trying to take a core sample.
Nobody authorized that.
The damn thing sounded hollow to me.
Hollow? There's no such thing as a hollow. Jesus Christ!
You were about to say?
While on their road trip, Jenny tries to ask the Starman about his purpose for arriving on Earth. However, his communication in English is limited. And that's, of course, because he only has a brief knowledge that he's just received from the home movies and on the radio.
What do you want here? What are you doing? What do you want with me? Where are you taking me? Why do you look so much like Scott?
I can't get no satisfaction.
Does it?
Send greetings. What the hell's going on here?
I'm being kidnapped.
Greetings. You better let her go, pal. I'll give you some greetings.
Great jobs.
The Starman uses one of the spears to cause an explosion. The man runs off, and then the Starman and Jenny get back into the car and continue to Arizona. Mark lands at NSA headquarters a short time later in an army chopper.
About those police calls, you did say anything weird, right?
Yeah, you got something?
Yeah, just picked up one from Ashland. Happened sometime this morning. A guy named Heimuller had a collision with an orange and black 77 Mustang. Now, the gal was driving claimed she was being kidnapped. But when this Heimuller went to help her, the guy who was with her, the kidnapper, yelled greetings and melted his lug wrench.
Yelled greetings and melted his lug wrench?
Where'd you want? Where'd you get?
How do you melt somebody's lug wrench?
Hey, I just copy them down. I don't explain them.
I don't suppose anybody got a license number.
Yeah, Wisconsin plates, Papa X-ray Victor 237. I'm checking the owner through DMV now.
Mark!
What is that thing?
Well, it's sort of an invitation, Major. You remember that package we sent up with the Voyager probe? There was a gold anodized disc with greetings from Earth in 54 different languages, complete with a nice little speech from Kurt Waldheim, to whom it may concern. Come and see us sometime.
We go back to Jenny and the Starman, and we get the humorous side of John Carpenter as the Starman learns about gas.
We're coming to a gas station. We're gonna need some gas, okay?
Gas.
Gas. For the car, fuel. energy. I step on the gas, the car goes. I take my foot off the gas, the car stops. Understand?
No, I do not understand. How can car need energy so soon?
I don't know. I'm just telling you, this is the gas gauge. When that needle gets to E, that's empty, no gas, the car stops, period.
Okay. Get gas.
Here you go.
Take it easy.
Yeah. Take it easy. Hi.
Hi, fill her up on it.
Gas.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I know. I have to go to the bathroom. The ladies' room. The restroom. It's when a person has to, Oh, to hell with it. You figure it out for yourself. I'm going. Women, me. Men, you. Understand?
Can't get her out, huh?
Gas.
Yeah, well, I know just how she feels.
Well, the Starman decides to then go into the men's room, and the guy that just made the joke thinks that the weirdo Starman is just trying to pick him up, which leads to another funny scene.
Every goddamn place you go.
Take it easy.
Up yours.
Take it easy. Up yours.
So now the Starman has two slang terms that he's learned. Take it easy and up yours. Along with the use of the middle finger when saying, up yours. While this is going on, Jenny has written a note and taped it to the bathroom mirror saying that she's been kidnapped, and she's heading west with her license plate number. However, the Starman finds the note and innocently takes it with him, thinking she left it by accident. He also assures Jenny that he means her no harm. The Starman is a quick study because now he's driving a car as Jenny rests in the passenger seat.
I am sorry. I did awaken you.
They sing a lot where you live.
Yes, we sing.
Do you ever get hungry? Empty here. Like a car needs gas?
Yes. This body has a terrible emptiness. This is called hungry.
Yeah, and when people get hungry, they have to eat food.
Eat. Yes, we must do that. We will stop at food station. You have hungry too.
I'm starving. I haven't eaten since.
Oh my God! Look out! What are you doing? You said you watched me. You said you knew the rules.
I do know the rules.
Oh, well, for your information, pal, that was a yellow light back there.
I watched you very carefully. Red light stop, green light go, yellow light go very fast.
You better let me drive.
I will drive.
As you just heard, the Starman is very observant, though it caused a huge pileup behind him. Back at the NSA, Mark tries to reason with the NSA director George Fox, played by Richard Jackall, and they talk about the mysterious meteor and the transformed alien.
Do you seriously expect me to tell the president that an alien has landed, assumed the identity of a dead house painter from Madison, Wisconsin, and is presently out tooling around the countryside in a hopped-up, orange and black 1977 Mustang?
We have the following givens. Look. That man, Scott Hayden, died last April. He's dead and buried. That's verified. He has no brothers, no look-alike cousins, but still this morning at approximately 6 o'clock...
All right. We have been through all of that. I'm going to ask you now, how could it happen?
We think it might be some kind of a cloning deal. Replication of an entire organism from a single cell.
We found some hairs from Scott Hayden's head.
But is that possible? I mean, can you clone a living organism from the hair of a dead man?
Well, human hair consists of keratinized cells, although I suppose in order to determine whether replication was possible,
Mark,
you'd have to...
I asked you a question.
You mean us? In our present state of technology?
Yes.
No.
Well, what the hell are we talking about?
We're hypothesizing a technology that's probably 100,000 years ahead of us. We're the ancients, Mr. Fox.
Ancients?
Technologically, yes. We've just started.
Yeah, but even if you're right, I still have problems. I mean, his knowledge of English.
Okay, listen to this. I helped put this package together, you know. This was designed so that an intelligent species could get a working knowledge of English. Enough to get by, anyhow. A couple hundred word vocabulary, a rough idea of syntax. Think of what it would mean to talk to a being from a civilization like that. Think of what we could learn.
147 member states who represent almost all of the human inhabitants of the planet Earth. I sent greetings.
Greetings, there. See, that's what he said to Heinmüller out on the road.
It is also what the cannibal said to the missionary just before he ate him.
Yeah, well, the question in this case is, who is the missionary and who are the cannibals?
While driving, the Starman explains his mission, which is to reach the destination in Arizona, and once he completes it, his human form will die. They then find a truck stop diner, or food station as the Starman calls it, and we see arguably one of the most memorable scenes of the film, as the Starman sees a dead deer strapped to the back of a hunter's car.
Dead deer.
Dead deer? Why?
People hunt them to eat for food.
Do deer eat people?
No.
Do people eat people?
No, of course not. What do you think we are?
I think you are a very primitive species.
What are you, soft-hearted? When you saw Bambi?
Define Bambi.
Huh?
He doesn't understand. He's not from around here.
Oh, you don't speak any English, huh?
Steer clear of that bozo.
be fine, Bozo.
Dirk.
Jenny tries to keep the Starman's mind on his destination in Arizona, but he keeps looking out the window at the diner, at the dead deer on the car, and also an old photo of Jenny and Scott.
That's me and Scott on our honeymoon. Our honeymoon is what you call it when two people first get married and they go off together after they've fallen in love.
You find love.
Love is it's when you care more for someone else than you do for yourself. But it's not just that, it's when someone is a part of you. And when they...
What?
Scott is dead. He was killed in an accident. When someone you love dies...
Define shit.
Don't say that. That's a nice word.
They are then served food, and the Starman enjoys his first taste of apple pie, though Jenny tries to tell him that he's supposed to eat the pie last, but he doesn't care.
Good.
It's terrific.
Primitive species, we have our points.
Anybody from Lincoln, Omaha, or Chicago, the bus leaves in 5 minutes.
Look, I got to go to the... I'll be right back. Excuse me. Is there a back way out of here?
Yeah, sure, through the kitchen. But why?
You know that fella I came in with?
Yeah?
Could you give these things to him after the bus leaves? It's just a map and some card keys and a credit card.
You sure, honey?
Yeah, I'm positive. Thanks.
Hey, honey! I wouldn't go out through the back door right now. That friend of yours, he's out there in the parking lot.
Show for the nice haunch of venison. Maybe even a shot of pork if you could. Oh, that son of a bitch.
No!
Hey! What happened to the goddamn deer?
She went there. To the woods.
Okay, comedian. Bingo.
Stop it! You leave him alone.
Butt out, girlie.
He doesn't understand. He's a foreigner. He doesn't speak English.
Oh, what?
Hey! Bingo.
Make you a little bit jumpy, Jenny Aiden.
You make me a little bit jumpy. I thought I told you to stay away from those bozos. It's okay. I think I understand. Looks better that way.
Thank you, Jenny Aiden.
Oh. All part of our friendly service.
You okay, honey?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I wanted to tell you, that eastbound bus is about to go. Want me to try to hold it?
Thank you. Never mind. Thanks, but never mind.
Good luck.
I'm gonna get that bastard, Donnie Bob, right now.
So it's a visual gag, but the Starman said up yours while flipping off the rednecks as he and Jenny speed off. The last scene was beautiful as the Starman revives the dead deer back to life as it scampers away. The rednecks end up crashing into the arriving bus before they can catch Jenny and the Starman. To achieve the special effect of bringing the deer back to life, the deer was given a sedative, and then right before shooting was to begin, an antidote of sorts would slowly awaken the deer. Bridget's had no idea what to expect, because animals, of course, are unpredictable. But the scene went perfectly, and what you see on film is what really happened. By the way, the main deer hunter is played by Ted White, who is a well-known stuntman and actor who my parents will always remember as Grogan in Romancing the Stone in the beginning of the film. However, horror movie fans will know him playing Jason Voorhees twice in Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, and Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood. Alright, back to the film. Jenny and the Starman are not in the clear yet, as their vehicle is now on all of the police radars, and they are seen by a patrol car, who set up a stakeout when Jenny and the Starman stop at a hotel for some rest. A couple of college students notice the cops trying to break into the car and warn them of what's going on. The students cause a diversion for Jenny and the Starman to escape, and this leads to a high-speed chase.
Good. No!
Jenny Hayden?
Papa Charlie 3. Papa Charlie 3. Suspects on I-80 proceeding northbound. Still in pursuit.
Jenny is shot and presumably killed by the police while in pursuit. The Starman uses one of his tiny spears to cause an explosion when he crashes the car into a tanker truck. He, of course, is unharmed as he carries Jenny's body through the wreckage. He hides in a mobile home being towed by a semi-truck and uses the two spears to bring her back to life, just like he did with the deer. Jenny wakes up as the semi-truck is stopped at a truck stop and she goes into the diner. Jenny calls the police, but instead is connected to Mark Sherman, as she explains to Mark she hasn't been kidnapped.
You looking for a fella? About yay tall, red plaid shirt, kind of nice looking?
Yeah, have you seen him?
He hitched a ride west with our night cook about half an hour ago.
Thank you very much. Look, I'm hanging up now. I've got to go. If you want to talk to me, you can call me in Madison in a few days. I'm in the phone book.
Wait, Mrs. Hayden. Do you know who or what you were kidnapped by?
He doesn't want to hurt anybody. Really, can't you just leave him alone?
Hello? Damn it.
I need a ride west fast.
Heck, I'll take you. Come on.
Let's go.
What'd you line?
Line?
Work. What do you do when you're not hitching rides?
Oh, I make maps.
Make any money?
I make maps.
You don't get rich cooking either, believe me. You know, I got a girl, she's getting ready to go to college this fall. Wife had to go back nursing just to help me pay for it. Here, want to smoke? Yeah, my little baby says she wants to be a doctor. I don't know. Costs an arm and a leg to raise up kids these days.
An arm and a leg?
Bread, eat it, money, and lots of it.
Nope, that's an understatement. Smoking isn't necessary on Starman's planet. Eventually, they're stopped by a roadblock and Jenny sees the Starman. The kid that gave Jenny a ride creates a diversion, and Jenny grabs the Starman and they flee the roadblock. They hitch another ride in the back of the truck and continue west. During the ride, we discover that Jenny is not able to have children, as the Starman asked why she didn't have children with Scott. They continue their journey on a freight train and they also have sex. Okay, there's about 30 minutes left and plenty of questions to be answered. The main one being if the Starman actually makes his destination, and if he does, will the military get in the way? There's also other surprises that I don't want to spoil. However, before I wrap up, I will play this scene in the last half of the film where Mark finally meets the Starman.
I'm Mark Sherman. SETI, the search for extraterrestrial. This is just such a... you mind if I sit down? There are so many questions that I'd like to ask you. I hardly even know where to begin. Have people from your world been here before?
Before, yes. We are interested in your species.
You mean some kind of an anthropologist? Is that what you're doing here? Just checking us out?
You are a strange species. Not like any other. And you would be surprised how many there are. Intelligent but savage. Shall I tell you what I find beautiful about you? You are at your very best when things are worst.
Oh, let him go, Mr. Sherman, please. If he stays here, he'll die. Can't you see he's dying now?
When talking about favorite John Carpenter films, Starman is rarely ever mentioned, but again, it's actually my favorite film from him. It's truly an underrated gem with terrific acting by both Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen. Bridges especially deserved an Oscar for his performance. If you missed out on Starman or haven't seen it in a while, please do yourself a favor and revisit it. Even non-fans of sci-fi, and frankly, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan, will definitely enjoy this film. Alright, some fun facts. Jeff Bridges was indeed nominated for an Oscar for Best Actor, but he lost out to F. Murray Abraham for Amadeus. This was the only John Carpenter film ever to be nominated for an Oscar. Even though the film wasn't an enormous box office success, it was critically acclaimed enough to create a short-lived TV series starring Robert Hayes, of course from Airplane fame. It lasted only one season and 22 episodes in 1986. Michael Douglas was actually the executive producer on this film. Now, the movie implies that the Voyager 2 space probe's famous golden record included the Rolling Stones song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. It actually did not. The only rock song included on the record was Chuck Berry's Johnny B. Goode. The directors that were considered prior to hiring John Carpenter were Mark Rydell, he was famous for On Golden Pond, Adrian Lynn, he was famous for Flashdance, John Badham, he was famous for Saturday Night Fever and War Games, Tony Scott, of course Top Gun, and Peter Hyams. He directed 2010, which was a sequel to 2001, A Space Odyssey. All right, we have two special guests, and that's the dynamic duo of Metal Mike Tyler and Bill Roseberry. They join me to talk about this underrated gem. And then I'll be back next week to talk about yet another random movie from my DVD collection. All right, we're back with the great dynamic duo of Metal Mike Tyler and Bill Roseberry to discuss, for me, one of the most underrated John Carpenter films. So welcome back, boys.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
Well, you can call me, I'm the dude, so that's what you call me. You know, that, or dudeness, or duder, or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
I think Bill got taken over by aliens, possibly those two spheres that we see in Starman, because he totally forgot what movie we're doing, but that's okay.
Well, that's your opinion, man.
Well, that's the thing about Jeff Bridges, and we're still early on in Jeff Bridges' career. Actually, we're not. In 1984, he'd already been acting for over a decade, which I think people forget about too, because he still looks pretty young in this film, but it just goes to show like how his career really progressed over time. And a lot of people forget about this movie, but not you guys, which is why I have you on. So I'm going to start with Mike on this one, because Mike's a little bit older. Did you see this in the theater when it came out? Because this would have been a great theater movie.
I did not. I'm sorry to say. It was one of those ones that for whatever reason passed by our radar because, you know, and my dad, you know, was a huge science fiction fan, and we love John Carpenter. So, but when it came out, I think on either VHS or cable is when I saw it, and we loved it. The whole family loved it. My mom and dad, I did. Mm-hmm. I honestly think it's not just an underrated Carpenter film, but also an underrated Jeff Bridges performance. Like, he was fucking phenomenal in this movie. Pardon my French, but he was just amazing. Like, how the way his mannerisms and the way it was like he was trying to get accustomed to how the human body works. He did such a phenomenal job, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Bill, I'm assuming this was a video rental or cable.
Video rental. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I'm an only child. So, mm-hmm. You know, we'd have, weekends when I was a kid, and we'd rent VHS tapes and go to the store, and we get to pick things out. And my mom is a huge Jeff Bridges fan, always has been. So I would have been 8 when this came out. Mm-hmm. I saw it immediately. It was brand new. I remember watching it. I remember we absolutely loved it. A great sci-fi film and just heartwarming. And I even thought as a kid that Jeff Bridges was phenomenal in it. Charles Martin Smith is another guy.
Yeah.
Who was in my house because my dad's favorite movie is American Graffiti.
Oh, so yeah.
We don't even call him Charles Martin Smith in my family. We call him Toad.
Toad, yep.
Yeah, the movie that Toad was in. We were going to watch that too. So you had Jeff Bridges and Toad. We were all about this one. So.
Well, and also, when I was growing up, I loved early 50s rock and roll, and he was in Buddy Holly's band in the Buddy Holly story, Gary Busey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, this is definitely a forgotten gem in John Carpenter's filmography because, most people remember his horror or his sci-fi action films. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's the reason why Starman doesn't get more love? It's just so much different than anything he's ever done. We'll start with Bill.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's more known for the horror movies. And I think the same thing goes as Jeff Bridges. I mean, when people start talking about Jeff Bridges is an actor, it's, they're talking about, now Crazy Heart, and of course The Big Lebowski, and you're talking about Last Picture Show, and you're talking about a lot of stuff like that, and Starman kind of gets lost in the mix there, too, and it's a shame, because this is a great movie, and like Mike said, I mean, one of the best acting performances, I think, that Jeff had. Karen Allen, again, I mean, probably from the movies that I've seen with Karen Allen, obviously Animal House and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I'm sure I've seen a couple others, but I'd have to look at her filmography. But this was always stood out to me as her best performance, too. So it is lost. And I think you're right. I think it's part of just because some of the other bigger, cult hits and blockbuster hits that those two were in, and all the big time horror movies that Carpenter did.
Yeah. Mike, why do you think that this film kind of gets forgotten?
Because for John Carpenter, and maybe for Carpenter fans, and I'm just speculating, of course, but maybe it was just a little too cerebral for him. Like you pointed out, it's not as action packed as Big Trouble in Little China or They Live. It's not, as violent as Halloween or Prince of Darkness and things like that. So I think maybe that might have something to do with it, but yeah, I think it's a fantastic movie, obviously. And and I agree with Bill. I think Karen did a great job as well.
Yeah, and we'll go back to Mike on this one. We've already kind of touched upon Jeff Bridges. You guys are already said this is one of his, best performances of his filmography, which says a lot. Because Bill started off, talking about The Big Lebowski, which now I think most people remember him as. But really, if you grew up earlier than that, I mean, that's just another, that's a cherry on top. Where would you guys rank this? I mean, this is hard in his filmography. So,
oh,
Mike.
Man, dude.
It's hard.
I'd have to say at least top 5 as far as we're talking performances. Yeah, I'd have to rank it that high.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah, I think I would too. I mean, for me, it's hands down. The Big Lebowski is number 1, but I'd rank it number 4. And I tell you what, I just pulled up. I got my IMDb up.
Yeah.
And pull up on Jeff Bridges' page. It says known for, and it's got 4 movies at the top, and it's The Big Lebowski, Crazy Heart, True Grit, and Starman.
There you go.
And probably those are probably my four favorite movies with him in them. So.
Yeah, yeah. And then again, you guys mentioned Karen Allen. I mean, she really did appear in some top movies in the late 70s and early 80s. Bill mentioned them, obviously Animal House and Raiders of the Lost Ark being the most popular. She did appear in Scrooged in the late 80s. And she continued to act consistently, but she really never became a superstar after those two films. And so why do you guys think that is? Because, again, like Jeff Bridges, she really stands out in Starman. We'll go with Bill on this one.
I really don't know, Brian, because, she was great in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and she's great in Starman. And, I mean, and obviously she was good in Animal House, too, which I think of more of an ensemble cast.
Sure.
She's super cute. And, you know, and she's got some sexiness to her, but I don't think maybe part of it was she wasn't, you know, classically beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think there was other probably leading ladies at that time that probably got more roles because of their looks, I think maybe part of it. But I mean, I think she's really pretty too, but I don't know. I mean, because she definitely had some chops and could hold her own on the screen with some, you know, Harrison Ford, Jeff Bridges. I mean, she's holding her own with some big time actors. I mean, so she should have been in more things.
Yeah. How about you? What do you think, Mike?
Well, I don't know. From what I understand, she as much as she loved doing movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark, she also liked doing a lot of she was quite the stage actress, from what I understand. And I think maybe just like smaller movies more, you know, because she did like she was in The Sandlot.
Yeah.
She was in Malcolm X. She was in Scrooge, like you pointed out. But she, you know, like The Glass Menagerie, she did that where she played the girl with the crippled foot. She did a lot of smaller films too, and maybe that might have had something to do with it, you know. But it seems to me that she also works as a stage director and has for quite some time. So I think she's just a lady that's got a lot of different interests, and she's also into knitting, according to her bio here. So, and you know, I don't know though, but I always thought she was as cute as a bug, man. I had a crush on her when I was a kid. I ain't gonna lie. Yep.
Well, Hollywood's fickle. I mean, look, you're here today, gone tomorrow. And,
well, yeah, what have you done for us lately? Very much so, you know. And it's like, and when a movie fails, it's like, why is it the person who's in the movie's fault?
Yeah.
It's not. Right. Sometimes, because there's been movies that were really, really good that were not box office successes when they first come out, and then later they find their niche. That happens a lot, man. Maybe it has something to do with the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You morons, but hey, that's, you know,
well, that's a
writing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect segue into what I want to talk about next. And so, you know, Starman comes out in 84. They wanted to release it earlier, but E.T. was super hot, so they didn't want to get into that. And this, you know, this film really touches on the common trope of aliens in films. I mean, basically since the beginning of film, you know, where humans simply overreact to the intentions of non-Earthlings. Do you guys think that Starman offers something more unique than like other films like The Day the Earth Stood Still, War of the Worlds? We mentioned E.T., Close Encounters. To me, it almost seems like a road movie with some romance. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the human element of the story of her loss of her husband and her dealing with all that emotion and things like that, and then having an alien come down and take the form of her dead husband, you know, and there was an emotional ride with that. And I think that added to it. There was that aspect of the story that I really liked. Like you said, the love story portion of the story, even more so than just the alien portion of the story. And I think that gave it a little bit of a different layer than some other ones. And, kind of hit home here with me recently when I was watching it, because, I have an old friend of mine who's going through that. Her husband just died in an accident. And it's like, you know, and I know she's been dealing with a lot of trauma from that. So watching this brought up some of that with me this time watching it. And I think it's, like you said, it was just a different layer that maybe you didn't have with E.T. and some of the other ones like that too, that I liked.
Yeah. And again, E.T.'s the biggest, I would say, comparison, because there's some empathy there compared to the other ones where it was straight up, let's destroy the aliens are here to harm us. Yeah. What do you think?
Level is huge. Yes, for sure.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. What about you, Mike?
Well, I don't really know if I can add any more than you guys just did. I mean, you pretty much covered all the bases. It's like, yeah, I think the fact that it's not just about an alien coming down and interacting with the human race. We've had stories like that before. This was different. He's a being of pure energy who uses the hair from her husband's DNA to literally grow himself a body. Right. And he's a genetic duplicate of her husband. That alone is, well, I'm going to say it right now, a mind fuck. If you think about it in that, like, could you just imagine seeing that, you know, your loved one, boom, you know, but they're not your loved one. That's into itself is kind of scary, really. And at first she's fearful for her life. She doesn't know what this dude wants or anything until one of the more poignant parts is when he asks her, well, what does kidnapped mean? You know, he's got the, and then she fucking just stops the car and basically just lays it all out of the line for him. And she's like, if you're going to kill me, just do it now. And he takes the gun. He's just kind of looking at her. And of course he, you know, unreleases the clip. And then he just says, I mean you no harm, Jenny Hayden. And the way he says her name, I always got a big kick out of it. I mean, it's just a great scene. One of my favorite parts of the movie actually is, you know, and it's, yeah, it's, it does kind of set itself apart from that aspect because one of the things that, and you know, you mentioned E.T. that I thought was brilliant about the way Spielberg did is when you're watching the movie and you never see the government agents. You know they're looking for E.T.
Yeah.
And you got that ominous music and the whole thing. You're like, oh, man, they're going to want to cut poor little E.T. open. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case at all. I mean, the minute he walks in and he's wearing that environmental suit and you see the kind face of Peter Coyote, you're immediate like, oh, he's here to help, you know. And I just thought Spielberg did that brilliantly because you're right, man. Most of it, it's like the day the earth stood still. First thing dude does, he shoots him, man. You know, he doesn't even hear him out. It's like, boom, you know?
Yep.
And he's there to help him, you know? So it's very, very typical a lot of times. And I hate to say it, I think realistic people. Yep,
no doubt.
It's like that line in Men in Black. Well, why don't you tell everybody people are smart? No, a person is smart.
Yeah.
People are dumb, stupid, panicky creatures, and everybody knows it. And it's so true. It's so true, man. So, I like I said, I think it's one of Carpenter's best. It's definitely underrated. I don't even know if there's a lot of people that know about it, man. And
Yeah.
Yeah, unless they grew up when we did. You know,
I'm gonna add one more thing because Mike brought up the whole scene with Jeff Bridges saying, what's kidnapped mean and all that. Mm-hmm. I think that was another element is watching him grow and almost become humanoid. You know, I mean, he was so awkward at first. And I mean, that goes into his acting performance in this for sure. But that was also interesting because you watched him grow and evolve and learn how to be a human, and he was like a child, you know. And I think taking that journey with Jeff in that role was another very interesting part of this movie.
Well, Bill, it's interesting 100%. You should say that because one of my other favorite parts is when he quoted her word for word.
Yeah.
She says, you remember that? And he just stops and he goes, everything I see, everything I hear, and then he goes, everything this body feels. It's like he stops himself. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really cool scene too, because it's like he is becoming more human and it's almost like he acknowledged it and it kind of scared him a little bit. Like, you know, because the way he just pauses and goes, everything this body feels. And I'm like, interesting, man. So it was just little stuff like that, the little niches, I think, is what just sets this movie apart from your typical alien coming to Earth story.
Very well done.
Now, Bill kind of touched upon this, you know, what he kind of noticed from the recent reviewing. Mike, was there anything new that you picked up from, you know, the recent viewing?
Well, the one thing that surprised me, because it had been a number of years since I had seen the film. And when I was watching it with Bill, I was like, I remembered certain things like, oh, I remember. And Bill's like, you what? You know, like, and I don't know why. But yeah, it's one of those movies where it's like when I watch it, even if I haven't watched it in a long time, I start remembering certain scenes and certain things that I hadn't really thought about in years, honestly. Mm-hmm. But it's like I said, I just think it's a fantastic movie. There is one interesting side note, though, you may not know.
Sure.
Much like with Karate Kid, the studio had to pay DC Comics for the use of Starman because they have a character called Starman.
I did.
Yes. And they have a character in the Legion of Superheroes called Karate Kid. That's your nerdgasm for the day, ladies, gentlemen. Thank you.
That's awesome. I love that. That's why we have you guys on. So you guys already
know that dork shit, Brian.
Right. That's why I call it nerdgasms.
That's why I'm the dude, you know?
Yeah,
I don't have time for that shit. So you guys kind of mentioned your favorite scenes already, but we'll go deeper into that and we'll go with Bill. But my favorite scene's always been with the hunters and the deer. That kid, I loved it. I love it today. I think it's, you know, that's the great part of you're always going to have those people in life that just don't get it. So I always love that. Bill, what are some of your other favorite scenes that you remember?
I was going to say you just stole my thunder, Brian.
Sorry.
Me too. You know, another one that I like, I think that it's a small part, but when he's in the bathroom, that's one of my favorite.
Oh, right.
Guy in the bathroom. Yeah. And that guy, I can't remember his name, but what a great
character actor. Yeah.
Every goddamn place you go.
Yeah.
Weirdo.
So, but another one is back to what Mike was talking about. I remember everything, you know, whatever, everything I see, everything I hear when he runs the yellow light and she's like screaming because she had done it earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
And runs the yellow light and she's like, "What are you doing? You don't do that." And he's like, "I'm just doing what you did." And she's like, "What do you mean? He about got us killed." And he goes, "No, red means stop. Green means go and yellow means go faster."
Right.
Yeah. I love that because it shows how hypocritical we are as a human race with certain things. We got our little rules, but you know, it reminds me, takes me back to like Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino, where he's talking to Keanu Reeves here, and you know, he's like, you know, look, but don't
feel.
Feel, you know. Yep. Touch, but don't taste or whatever. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, he's like, you know, it's a sick game we play, you know, and that's, yeah, there is a lot of that hypocrisy in our culture for sure. And I think it's funny when they bring that stuff out like that.
Well, and he is like a child. He's like a clay, you know, he's clay that's being molded always. And he's a sponge. He takes everything, as you guys said.
Yep.
Yep. And that's why you got to be careful. Even with kids, it's like little things that you've learned over time aren't necessarily good habits. They seem to work, but
right. It's a funny story.
Go for it.
About that same thing. So you like us to go off on a little tangent. So anyway, my cousin Brandon, mm-hmm. When he was, Brandon and I are 15 years apart. So he used to come out and stay at my house all the time. So you got to figure when he was really little, I was the height of being a young, dumb teenager. So I'm probably 18. Mm-hmm. Come home from dinner or come home from work and everybody's sitting at a dinner. He's sitting in his high chair in the corner and we sit down and I just stand up and I start rubbing my stomach and I go, "Oh, I got to go take a dump. I'll be back." And my mom starts yelling and he's just staring at me. So my mom's like, "Bill, how many times have I told you don't do that kind of stuff in front of him?" He just picks up on it. So about a week later, the phone rings and my mom says it and she starts laughing and she goes, "Oh, Bill, it's your Aunt Melanie on the phone." I go and I get on the phone and my Aunt Melanie's on there and she starts yelling at me. She goes, "What the hell are you teaching my son?" She's like, "We were sitting down to get ready to eat dinner the other day. And he stood up and started rubbing his stomach and said, 'Oh, I got to go take a dump,' and just put it in the ring." I mean, and so when I watch this movie, I think of stuff like that because it's exactly the same thing. Because he's like, "Why am I in trouble? Bill did it, you know?"
Well, this just happened the other night. So we're recording this a couple weeks after Halloween, and so my doorbell had kind of broken, and I was trying to fix it and try to put it back on, and it fell off and whatever. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll just leave it up there. And so I go and my group of kids come to the door, and it accidentally fell off, and it kind of broke, like it kind of split apart because it was this little plastic thing. And I opened up the door, I'm like, "Oh shit." And then like I kind of caught myself because it's like, you know, 6-year-old, and Lindsay's next to me, she's like, you know, it was, you know, so I'm like, I don't even think about it because, you know, I'm not around kids or anything. So what I wanted to do was be like, "I'm sorry guys, I can't give you any candy, you broke my doorbell," but I was nice enough to let them have whatever they want. But yeah, you if you're not around kids especially, you forget, you know.
Well, I didn't care, I liked making him do stuff like that. I thought it was funny. I taught him all kinds of crazy stuff when I was a kid. He bitches at me all the time from some of the stuff I used to do to tournaments.
He was that dick cousin. You can say, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of them that goes on our trips with us every year with Mike and I and him and our buddy Rob. And yeah, he's always telling these guys what a dick I was when he was a little kid.
Well, to kind of wrap up, this is kind of a fun fact. So we're talking about how great Jeff Bridges was, and he was recognized. He was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actor. Unfortunately, he was going up against Amadeus at the time, so he lost to F. Murray Abraham. I'm sure you guys have seen that movie.
Yes.
I don't know. It'd be hard to go against that guy, but I don't know. I lean towards Jeff Bridges on this one. What do you think, Mike?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, F. Murray Abraham did such a phenomenal job playing Salieri. It is an amazing, but just almost apples to oranges. But I mean, just the way Jeff was able to, like I said, simulate the awkwardness of an, you know, he took it to that realistic level. Like, that's probably what it would be like if you had, especially an entity that's of pure energy. And they grow a body from and become humanoid. That's probably the way it would be. It would be very awkward, very, you know, alien like.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that Jeff just nails it, man. So yeah, I might have to say, personally, yeah, I think Jeff's performance is better. But that's not to disparage F. Murray Abraham. He was phenomenal in that role.
And I think that's the case where the movie, like, doing better at the bottom, it was such a phenomenon, Amadeus, that I think that helped sometimes. And that happens every year. It's like it's like a clean sweep because people are voting on the movie as opposed to the performance, not to disparage F. Murray Abraham. Did you ever see Amadeus, Bill?
Yeah, I actually watched it with Mike. And
okay,
as a movie, I liked Amadeus, but I mean, I choose Starman every day of the week.
Yeah,
just from what I like. I mean, but Amadeus was very well done, and man, it's hard for me. His F. Murray Abraham was really good.
Yeah, he was.
And I've only seen it once. I've seen Starman more times. I mean, I've watched it twice in probably the last 2 years, because I just added it to my collection, and I had to take it over and watched it with mom and dad again.
Yeah,
my mom absolutely loves this movie and loves Jeff Bridges, so it'd be hard. I can't disparage the decision to give it to F. Murray Abraham either. I mean, he was great in there, but I mean, Jeff was definitely deserved of being nominated. And I think, like Mike said, it's comparing apples to oranges.
Sure.
I hadn't even looked that far into it to realize that he was nominated. I didn't remember that. So yeah, he got that kind of recognition for it because he definitely deserved it.
Well, I think that back in the day, sci-fi films, definitely comedy films, weren't getting love. Exactly. And so I think today he might have won. I don't know. But no, I mean, regardless, getting nominated, I think at that point was probably it.
You know, exactly. The thing about Jeff is, I think a lot of people, you know, our age and in our wheelhouse, you always think of the dude, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always do. And in interviews and in everything that he's ever done, I think that's his favorite role. And when he does interviews and you see him talking, I don't think it's far removed from what Jeff Bridges is. I think Jeffrey Lebowski is Jeff Bridges in a lot of ways. So I think that was one where he wasn't really acting, you know, he was just being himself. But you forget sometimes what a great actor this guy is, you know?
Yeah.
And I get kind of like that now, where I just think of him as the dude, you know, and kind of old hippie type guy. But you watch him. I mean, I watched Stay Hungry a while back. He was great in that.
Yeah.
You know,
Seabiscuit.
Yeah, Seabiscuit. He's great. Hell or High Water.
Yep.
What a phenomenal movie that was. And he was great in that. I mean, he's done a lot of great roles through the years, and he's a tremendous actor, and I think one of the best we got left right now, you know. And I mean, I think he's probably a little underrated on that list of some of the greats that are still living. So
yeah, and I love his mid-80s, like kind of like noir thrillers where it'd be Against All Odds, Jagged Edge, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. Yep. Yeah, he was great in those two. I don't think Jeff's ever put in a bad performance, man, or even really done, even if the movie wasn't good, he's been good in it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I was going to say, what was that shit-ass movie? I'm looking it up. It was several years ago. I watched it, and I was like, what a piece of shit this movie was.
Was it K-Pax? It's
taking a minute. Huh? No, K-Pax. I like K-Pax. He was. Okay. I thought he was good in that. I actually own that, Brian.
Okay.
You dogging on K-Pax, sir?
I don't want to go too much on this, but I know Mike's.
R.I.P.D. That was the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was a bad fucking movie, dude. Yeah, that was really bad.
All right,
Mike. What do you feel about? Because this is right up your alley. Did you like the original Tron, or was that something you picked up? Or I don't know. Do you like it at all?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it okay, you know. I remember when it came out, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. It was never one of my favorite, and I'm a sci-fi guy, so you would have thought I'd been all about Tron, but it was okay. I mean, I watched it like once or twice, and it was like, it's no fucking Star Wars, and moved on with my life kind of thing, you know. And the reason why I'm saying that is because at the time when the movie came out, oh my God, you know, it's, you know, and I'm like, when I watch it, I'm like, well, it's all right, you know, but it wasn't anything. Let's just put it this way. Tron is not a movie I've really go back to.
Got it.
You know, I've seen it once or twice. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
But it's not on my list of like greatest movies of all time. It's definitely not on my top Jeff Bridges.
No. And we've talked about this.
Hey, Metal Mark's putting his,
okay.
Come here, Metal Mark. Tell him what you think. Come here.
I thought that movie was
good. You got to talk into the microphone, buddy.
I thought that movie was good. At least I thought it was a lot better than the black hole.
Oh, that's far. A good. That's a good call out. That
is a good call out. Yeah.
Yeah, Disney, it's also Disney. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The black hole did suck, man. It really was truly a black hole.
No pun intended.
So, yeah, it was a black hole, all right.
I will leave us on this, and Mike and I have talked about this all the time. One of the better films to come out in the last 10 years, it's kind of a neo-western, is Hell or High Water, and Jeff Bridges is in that as well.
Highly recommended by all of us.
Oh, phenomenal. Isn't that
Chris Pine?
Guys doing Yellowstone, right?
Yeah, Taylor Sheridan wrote and directed that movie.
Yeah, I thought that was a Taylor Sheridan movie. Yeah. Yeah. Great movie.
Well done.
High Water. Yeah.
Well, thank you, boys, for doing this. I hope we, you know, introduce people that may have missed this back in the day. And also, if you haven't seen it in a long time, it's definitely worth revisiting. So thank you again, the dynamic duo of Bill and Mike.
And remember, don't tell little kids, don't say that you got to take a dump in front of little kids or aliens, because they may just, you know, copy what you say.
That's right. That's right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
If you enjoy this podcast and are an iTunes user, please do the show a favor and head on over to the official iTunes page for Damn Good Movie Memories. Be sure to leave a rating and a review. This will allow the show to appear higher in the algorithm and spread the joy of this podcast to the masses. If you are not an iTunes user, you can still listen and subscribe on Podbean at damngoodmoviememories.podbean.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook under our Damn Good Movie Memories page. You can also listen to a limited number of episodes on YouTube. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of Damn Good Movie Memories.